Hello and welcome to a new edition of Big Mouth, where we talk about pop music, films, telly and books with all the love and exasperation of true addicts. My name is Andrew Harrison, and it's a special edition this week because I'm on holiday, and so is our producer Matt Hall. So while we enjoy our holiday on the buses week and argue about the chalet and who's going to enter the Knobbly Knees contest, we've put together this special roundup of some of the best music releases of the year so far. Later in the show, we'll be looking at this year's releases by Sleaford Mods and Stormzy, with guests Andrew Mayle of Mojo and The Guardian and Mark Hooper of Hole and Corner magazine. And we'll be having a poke at the XX and the Flaming Lips with rock and roll author Zoe Howe and Eamon Ford, the best thing to come out of Ballymena since the Boris Bus. But first, how do you like your hip-hop? Veteran duo Killer Mike and LP released their third album as Run the Jewels this year. Imaginatively, it was entitled Run the Jewels 3. To assess this album, of course, we got the indiest woman in London and a man who loves ancient novels about goings-on in English stately homes. Here are ex-Smash Hits journo Sean Pattenden and Andy Miller of the Brilliant Books podcast Backlisted, plus me and Matt, on Run the Jewels 3.
I hope with the highest of hopes that I never have to go back to the trap and my days are dealing with dope. So I only spit fire and dope. So later on you can go quote my lines to your people and folk. And they say, dang.
Run the Jewels with Down. Now, we don't usually go to Matt first, but this is your wheelhouse, Matt Hall. What's going on here? Explain who these guys are.
So, well, as you said, Killer Mike comes from Atlanta and is had a marginally kind of successful career, hooking up with various different kind of southern luminaries, including Outkast and T.I. LP, first, as you said, came out with Company Flow. LP stands for El Producto because he was the production side of things. He's well known for making kind of almost industrial stuff, and certainly some of the Company Flow stuff, which came out in the kind of mid-90s out of that New York kind of backpacker raucous scene, was very, very un-hip-hop in its lack of funk, in its kind of complete noise, and very wordy and very kind of confrontational in terms of, we're really going to make you work at this.
But
yeah, it wasn't apart from one or two tracks, didn't really float my boat. That wasn't underground enough for him, so he went off and started a label called Def Jux and released a lot of other kind of really underground stuff like Cannibal Ox, which you probably may not have heard of, and then hooked up with Killer Mike about 3 or 4 years ago, put this project together, and since then have become kind of heroes of the alt-rap scene, can we say that? And an interesting business model. This is their third proper album. They release them all for free, and then you can buy special limited edition ones. They tour massively in the States. They're real kind of like they're kind of road dogs, as it were. They're on the move all the time. They were playing a gig in St. Louis when the verdicts were handed down on the Ferguson shooting, and Mike was on stage 2 hours after the verdict had been handed out and did this amazing off the cuff speech about what it meant for his son growing up and what it meant for kind of all black kids growing up. Interesting subtext is that his father was a police officer, so he's kind of spoken a lot about police brutality. And then he went on to support Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries. So the interesting thing about this album is that it's actually kind of almost their least political work. I mean, there's a sense of anger there, but there's always been a sense of anger there. I think he's said in interviews he's got sick of being the political rapper that everyone goes to and having to explain that Killer Mike doesn't mean he kills people, it means he kills mics.
I must take slight issue with that. I really love this record, right? And you're always seeing articles in newspapers saying, where is the spirit of protest?
Yes, in popular sick to music, death of that story,
right? Look at all the best-selling albums of hip-hop and R&B in America in the last year, couple of years.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar, Solange, the Beyoncé album, this album.
Yeah.
Happening right now, right in front of people, in huge numbers.
This is a recurring theme on the podcast because people have mentioned this before, the fact that it doesn't count as political music unless it's like four indie kids.
There's a brilliant track on this called Thieves, which starts with a sample from Rod Serling, which is, I think, is from Night Gallery, not the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
And then it ends with a Martin Luther King sample, which this week, of course, Martin Luther King, there's been an attempt to appropriate Martin Luther King by the alt-right in the States. Mm. So to hear this voice from 50 years ago being put back into its righteous context, that's really stirring, you know?
Yep.
And but also what Matt was saying, like the last track on this album is called The Report to the Shareholders, which in and of itself is great. There's a lyric on that which is, He says, maybe that's why me and Mike get along. Not from the same part of town, but we both hear the same sound coming and it sounds like war.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the way this record builds and builds and builds and builds. Mm-hmm. And by the time they get to the last track, they're saying, well, get to the barricades.
Yeah.
It's like Les Miserables.
There you go, yeah. Sean, what was your take on Run the Jewels 3? Because this is probably something that you're not entirely on your playlists all the time.
No, because I like my hip-hop Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
I still like De La Soul when they started.
Yes.
You know, I like Jurassic 5. It's like, hello. And I like New York hip-hop because it's all a bit more cerebral. You know, they've got more words in it sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't mind a bit of gangster rap, but when it sounds heavy immediately, the first track doesn't. First track's the hit, isn't it? It's like, well, hey, it was like, well, hey, this is great. And then it goes really heavy and what they sometimes call Scooby-Doo music. So there's going, lots of minor chords in the background.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought, oh, God, we've got the dystopian nightmare and I'm not sure I can do dystopian nightmare. It's Monday morning. Also, they use the B word for ladies quite a lot. Now, initially doing the B word for ladies, I'm not quite sure. Are they nice men or are they, you know, you never can tell whether it's just all about bottoms and things like that.
Yeah.
So, had a bit of a think about it.
Yeah.
Because I was thought, I'm not sure about the people. Listened to it again, just thought, oh, this is amazing. And just really got into it. It was almost like this instant first here, I've just got to get used to the whole sound of it. Yes, I thought it was wonderful. The sounds, as you say, you can still hear that sort of industrial feel.
Yeah.
It's quite heavy in that way. But there's all this sort of movement within, all these sort of kind of drug rush bits.
Yeah.
You know, like they know they're going to play it in clubs. They know they're going to play it to a really big audience. So you sort of get the highs and the lows of it, really. You know, I say,
and
you're
no
following
skits.
No
you're
skits,
following
yeah.
a story.
No grout between the tiles, yes.
And they're clever, it's funny, it's witty, all that sort of stuff. So I started to really, really like it.
Mike, they both deliver really amusing punchlines.
Yeah.
You know, each
and
couplet is almost
really,
a kind of gag.
Yeah,
that, you know.
Yeah.
What I really like about it is, like, as Sean's just said, it's really kind of musically constructed. There's a lot going on. And what I mean, as somebody who used to listen to a lot of hip-hop and then just fell off as you get older, what I find hard to get into current kind of hardcore stuff is that it can be incredibly sparse. To an outsider, it just feels like there's not that much going on here. It's really, really full. Mm. Also,
yeah,
I like the fact
multi-layered.
That they're not. What I really like about it as well is they're not trying to bully you with their hardcoreness, their macho qualities, and their masculinity.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like there's a great confidence.
Which initially,
here.
What I had thought because of the use of the B word, which we don't do in this country.
It's
so
interesting.
Much
there
ladies,
is some of
you know
that
I mean?
In there, but then again. You know, it's inherent in the form that there has to be some
but by
bragging.
By the standard of the form, this is by the standards where every single record is called "I am the greatest human who has ever existed." This is comparatively modest.
I also like the fact that these guys basically make an album a year.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, they drop an album, they tour it once. They put it out for free. They get another one out there.
And that's
and
amazing,
keep going.
Yeah.
Not content with that, they also had to. They put out a remix album last year called Meow the Jewels.
Which is
entirely based around the Meow Mix cat food commercial.
Is it any,
meow,
is it
meow,
any,
meow, meow.
I did listen
good?
To it.
I haven't listened to it.
It's kind of. It's not as good as the Run the Jewels record. I'll give it that. But I'll give them this.
Idea.
Yeah, they
also,
put it out.
There's also, and it's not. It's not. I think an official release or even anything that they may have knowledge of. But there's a fantastic remix about 20 minutes. Mixtape on SoundCloud called Shadow the Jewels, which is basically a cappellas of their first album over beats from DJ Shadow's Introducing, which is slightly less frenetic and equally good.
Well, I have to give an on-air apology to friend of the podcast, Paul McGee, who's been banging on about these for years, and I didn't listen to them because of the other people who were banging on about them, because it's getting certain overheated music websites which only have, they have two settings, this is terrible and should be destroyed, and this is the greatest thing ever, and you just kind of think, oh, come on, it can't possibly be. And so I missed out on the first two albums by this fantastic act. So, Paul McGee, this is your on-air apology. I apologise to you. The Flaming Lips abandon the abrasive drone and metallic horror of their last couple of albums and get back to warm cosmic electronica with their 12th or 14th or something or other album, which is entitled, and I hope I'm going to say this right, Oczy Młodych, which is Polish and it means Eyes of the Young. If we have any Polish listeners who want to be angry about my mispronunciation, give us a shout. But first, before we talk about Flaming Lips, we're going to talk about the third album by The XX, the agonizingly sensitive super minimal electronic trio. From that album, I See You, here's one of the lead tracks. This one's called On Hold.
I don't blame you. We got carried away. I can't hold on.
I thought I had you on.
Thank you.
On Hold by the XX. Did you spot the I Can't Go For That sample? Zoe Howe. The XX have a knack for taking the kind of clubbiness out of clubbing music and making a rave sound like the loneliest place in the world. What did you make of it?
Well, I don't think it's really aimed at me, but you know, I'm not massively familiar with the XX, but I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was quite pleasant. Personally, I prefer a bit more blood and guts in my music. Yes. I like a bit of a warp in the weft. I want some creepiness. Mm. But I have a feeling this album would grow on me. I like that there are some lovely vocal harmonies.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's not massively for me.
To me, it's like part of the emotional landscape of pop now is very buttoned up and very introspective. It's not about letting things. It's not about spilling your guts. Mm. It's about sort of looking into your inward fragility, kind of thing. And I think they do it very well.
They do. Yeah. And as I say, I'm sure. You know, I'm sort of enjoying kind of getting to know it a little bit. But as you say, sterility is a good word. I tend to be sort of drawn naturally more to sort of a bit of dirt.
Yes. Active sensuality. Eamon, what did you make of this album?
Well, when I was given my homework to listen to this album, I listened to it for the first time and kind of went, I really don't get this at all. So, and I kind of played it a couple of times and it just wasn't connecting. And then when you said, what do you think of the album? I went, I don't really like it. And then I went back and gave it another listen, and about three or four tracks really clicked.
Yeah.
And I really liked them. But I find, and I get the irony of what I'm just about to say, given the way that I speak, but they need elocution lessons, because it's just this wishy-washy, lispy, lazy delivery. And that kind of makes older songs sound the same. There's lots of really interesting stuff production-wise that Jimmy XX is doing, and I think just when those two start singing, they make everything kind of just this kind of very grey. Maybe that's the point. I think the most interesting thing I think about this album was that I heard this story. I don't know if it's true or not, but it was supposed to come out on the 20th of January, and then they realised that was going to clash with Trump's inauguration, so it would get buried in the kind of the media stuff. So they brought the release forward. I don't know if that's
I'm
true
not
or
sure
not.
I'm sure that the Venn diagram of people who are interested in Donald Trump's inauguration and people who are interested
the fact that on the 20th of January, it's just going to be a complete media saturation by Trump.
Well, it's really good that they found some really clear water where nobody's banging on about Donald Trump at the moment, isn't it? You know, they've got the quiet before the storm.
I like your use of really clear water there.
I'd just like to say with this, I think when they first came out, there was a feeling that when Jamie XX went off and did his kind of more clubby stuff, it was, the feeling that I had was, like, well, that's because he can't do it within the environment of the band, because they were really minimal and very breathy, and he was the guy who wanted to kind of put the bangers on, the afterburners on, as it were. It feels like they're starting to kind of combine those two things, the breathiness and the minimalism, but it seems to be slightly more up tempo and a slightly kind of fuller sound. And that to me kind of a little bit is reducing, I mean, obviously you've got to move on and develop, but it's kind of reducing a little bit what made them special and different in the first place.
The songwriting, actually, you would never have particularly thought of them as a capital S songwriting band in the past. It was all about sonic cathedrals of sound and tableaus and textures and all the rest of it. What struck me about this is that you could see a couple of these tunes adapted for an X Factor finale in the future. You know, you've got there's a song called Performance, which is all about creating the world, putting on this brave show. There's a fantastic song called Brave For You, which the arrangement really, if you filled out the arrangement and added the strings and the grand band, I could totally see Simon Cowell pushing this on someone, because it is about the concern of now, which is I'm weak and I'm fragile and I'm being brave in front of a large audience. I think there's actually a lot better songwriting going on here than maybe you might think of a band like this.
Yeah.
Maybe is it a bit like Bob Dylan then, in that they need other people to sing the songs for them to show you what they could sound like?
I think the songs work perfectly for their voices. I think that as the two, the tension between the male and the female voice, I think this is really, really nice album. It's not kind of something you put on before you're going out, but it's got some great songs in it. I think
I'm surprised by how much I liked it, and I think I probably will go back and
this is what in the old days of Mixmag, this was referred to as like a 4 a.m. come down record.
Well,
everybody's come back from the club and for some reason they can't get to sleep.
They're quite excited. All those lights,
absolutely. Yeah. Let's put on something a little bit emotional.
But they do stuff,
ice creams,
and they're really, the samples are used really cleverly. They're kind of. They're not just kind of doing it all by numbers. That track Replica with the, I think it's
I like that one.
And every breath you take, sample on it, which is lovely. Worked in beautifully.
They're a very literate band, and I think he's a really interesting producer as well.
I think I agree with Zoe, though. I think I just want a bit more kind of, you know, euphoria in my music, and a bit more kind of like sense of human. You know, human excitement in there. Should we talk about some old guys? Let's talk about the Flaming Lips, who seemed to lose their way sort of in the mid-noughties when we sort of started to get a lot of unfocused and frankly terrifying art rock around the Embryonic album afterwards. And then they started doing, you know, lots of collaborations with people like Keisha and Tame Impala and Neon Indian, and it was like they were running through Pitchfork with a highlighter pen. This one, Oxymelody, I think it's a lot better. It's got a lot more light and shade and actual pathos in there. Zoe, what did you make of this?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite a departure. I mean, I was never massively into the Flaming Lips. I was never a huge fan of Wayne Coyne's voice. I thought it was sort of sounded a little bit anemic for my taste. But you know, I really enjoyed it, and it wasn't what I expected at all. I sort of detected these sort of soupçons of 80s synths, and it kind of made me think. I can imagine quite a few of the tracks on this album being used maybe in a sort of in Stranger Things, or you know, being used in film and TV, because they're really atmospheric.
Loads of analog synths and stuff like that. Wayne's voice is always a sticking point with a lot of people. I love it because he can't sing. I don't really like people who can sing.
I don't
want to hear people's amazing techniques. I want to hear somebody straining to say something with a kind of imperfect instrument, and I think it does give it great pathos. Eamon, what did you reckon of?
Oh, we're talking about one gear. I find it quite a lot. I find myself kind of nodding off. It was almost like when you're driving really, really late at night on a quiet road, and you're kind of you feel yourself zone out, and then you lurch back and you go, I can't remember the last kind of 3 minutes of driving. And I find myself doing that, kind of going, is that still on? And I really, really tried with it, but I just find myself. I know it's the most overused word in the social media age. I didn't find it very engaging. It didn't hook me in any way. I think it's a nice thing to kind of have on in the background, and it's probably the kind of thing that I would have on the background when I'm doing something else, but I wasn't what they refer to as lean forward in my listening.
See, this is, Eamon, this is, you've just become a victim of the short attention
span. I have. Yeah.
Modern culture.
I am.
I like that fact that you can drift off into it. I think it's genuinely, their music is genuinely psychedelic. And it is, you know, there's a fantastic track called There Should Be Unicorns, which it starts off on this mad electronic reverie. And then suddenly, this kind of James Earl Jones voice appears.
It is James Earl Jones, isn't it?
I think somebody else.
It's doing a very good impression.
Yeah, describing effectively what sounds like this kind of Restaurant at the End of the Universe ultimate mega rave. Yeah. Where
that was quite funny, that bit.
Spectacular, insane creatures, and if the police turn up, we'll just give them so much money, they'll give up their jobs. And to me, that's like the core of what the Flaming Lips are about. It's like if you got hold of the Grateful Dead and you took out all the 18-minute guitar solos and you made them learn ancient synthesizers. Stephen Droege, I think, is massively underrated as a producer in the Flaming Lips. He's one of the members. They're all kind of co-producers. For creating these insane landscapes and sort of, you know, being that kind of architect of modern psychedelia, really.
But I saw them a few years ago headline the other stage at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And they made complete sense. There was Wayne Coyne in a massive kind of see-through ball in the crowd, and everybody on stage, and it was brilliant. I didn't really get the feeling with this that there were any tracks that would translate to that.
Do You Realise, or is she?
There was nothing that you could imagine 30,000 people blissfully chanting along to with their arms in the air.
I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is they did their big pop moment with the soft bulletin with Waiting for Superman and Yoshimi versus the Pink Robots, which has got the great Do You Realise, one of the great classic singles of all time. And they've done their big pop moment. But also, I think basically Wayne's been through the mill. He's been through like a personal miserable time. You know, he split up with his wife of God knows how long. And I don't think, you know, at his best, he was always like this kind of, Pied Piper, merry prankster, turn up the sunshine, microdots for everybody, this is going to be amazing. I think Roy Wilkinson, music writer and friend of the podcast, said if they ever have an American Doctor Who, it ought to be Wayne Coyne. You know,
cause, he's right.
Crazy hair, ridiculously positive. And he's been through the mill in the past few years, and I think that's why he's become introspective. Also, the other thing, you know, okay, it's like the stupid conceit of the time to think that everything a bit sad is all about Donald Trump. But, you know, when you're the Flaming Lips and you represent the vanguard of furry freakdom and everything you love is just basically being destroyed before your very eyes. There's a track on there called The Castle, which I think is about the suicide of one of their friends, but it's like It's about the ruin of everything beautiful. It's about everything coming down around your ears. And to me, like, that's as important in pop music as, come on, everybody, let's go mental.
Completely,
you know,
yeah.
You've got to have something to get you through the miserable times. I mean, I really enjoyed it, and I like the fact that it's got that kind of ambient quality of changing your environment. Have you ever been to see them, Zoe?
I haven't, no, but I gather a Flaming Lips show is a thing to behold, put it mildly.
It's quite joyous.
It sounds
because he kind of comes in this bowl and kind of rolls through the crowd, and then there's like people dressed up as animals, and he's got this kind of confetti cannon that he runs around and shoots into the crowd and stuff, and it's just this wonderful...
It's just random people wandering around on stage.
And then they do this really quite brilliant cover version of Bohemian Rhapsody as well. It was a kind of a live staple for a long time.
I thought I imagined that.
So the Flaming Lips, we think they're a good thing, don't we? We do.
Overall.
Let's have a track from that Flaming Lips album. This is Sunrise, Eyes of the Young. That was the Flaming Lips from Ochi Melodi with Sunrise, open brackets, Eyes of the Young, close brackets. As promised, we're going to talk about two of the key albums this week. One is the new UK number one album, Gang Signs and Prayer, the debut by London grime MC Stormzy. Michael Omari from Thornton Heath has come up through the independent grime scene, purely on freestyles, YouTube clips and guest performances, to become one of Britain's biggest talents. His first album comes out on his independent hashtag Murky label and features MNEK, Wretch 32 and a load of baffling but exciting grime people. That's what the urban youth are listening to, but what about the miserable old white guys? Well, they are listening to rap as well, kind of. Sleaford Mods release what looks like their 10th album, if you can count them, this week. It's called English Tapas. Jason Williamson from the band says, Andrew, his partner in the band, walked into some random pub and saw English Tapas scrawled on the menu board. Underneath this beautiful coupling of words were its components. Half a scotch egg, a cup of chips, pickle and a mini pork pie. It says everything about this fucking place. It's comedy, it's make-do, it's ignorance, and above all, it's shit. Before we talk about English Tapas, let's have a listen. This track is I Feel So Wrong.
Tonight, it looked like a picture. I tried to figure if it was real or just a fixture. Sometimes it winks at me, sometimes it smiles.
Actual singing alert. That was I Feel So Wrong by Sleaford Mods from English Tapas. Now, Andrew Mayle, you had a bit of a Proustian rush there, didn't you?
He sounds like Vi Subversa from the Poison Girls.
That's probably, they should stick that on the sticker on the front, shouldn't they?
But no, but it's kind of, and you hear that and you think, that's exactly what it's reminding me of. That was sort of, you know, playing with my head, that kind of weird world of kind of regional, small-time, post-punk Britain in the early 80s. You know, that kind of very cheap, very make-do, very angry, very regional. And you kind of, you know, I was it always used to bother me when I kind of listened to Sleaford Mods. Goes, who's it remind me of? And that's it. And as soon as that kind of, that voice came in, it kind of all sort of, a foul Proustian rush.
Do you think things were better when a train to London took like 6 hours instead of two then? Because it just preserved that world.
One of my friends, when I was at North Staff's Polly, which is very kind of vice versa of the
mods,
Poison Girls, very Sleaford Mods. We had a mate, Mick the Old Punk, he was called. He was 26. Right, and Mick the Old Punk basically said kind of he would time train journeys by how many cans you got. So it was like kind of whether it was a four canner or a six canner, you know, and that was kind of how you measured time in the 80s.
So Darwin measured his... this is true. It sounds like a joke. It's how Darwin measured how difficult a scientific theory was. Why he would go on a walk and knock a stone over it each time he'd done a lap of his garden.
Not a canister.
He had
like
a lager. Probably had a lager on top
punk
of the pile
Darwin.
Of stone.
By using my punk Darwin measurements.
Exactly. Anyway, back to the subject. Andrew Mayle, what do you make of them in general? And what do you make of this record?
In general, I like them. I like that kind of sort of fractured, Turetic surrealism, did you call it? And you kind of, you know, news broadcasts from somewhere sort of static and horrible. It's weird, kind of, because I follow them on Twitter, and what was odd was they retweeted something that I'd said, and all the followers that got back, or the people who followed them, it was loads of kind of problematic UK flag icons. And it was funny listening to this, not knowing where the authorial voice is coming from. It could be misconstrued and sound like a lot of Brexit moaning. But when they're good, so there's a track called Drayton Manored, which is absolutely fantastic, about that modern alcoholic lost weekend. You know, put my phone in tar. A trip to Spa is like a trip to Mars. When they sort of tap into that six-pint surrealism of fractured Britain, I think they're brilliant. But I think there's occasional sort of moments on this, you know, when you've got the farting sound effects on Army Nights, and when it just kind of sounds like the League of Bald-Headed Men griping about, you know, how things are crap. It can become a bit wearying and a bit problematic. Where is this voice of complaint coming from? Yeah. Who is saying it? And what do they what do they think?
This album has got, there's a track on it called Just Like We Do, which sounds to me like it is Jason Williamson having a right pop at Noel Gallagher.
Yeah.
You can see where that's coming from. That's actually a bit different from what they've done before. He's actually kind of standing up and going, this is me, and I don't like you.
Yeah.
And
Noel Gallagher, Noel Gallagher famously dismissed him as standing like the brown bottle out of Viz comic, which I don't think is a diss or a...
No, absolutely not.
Mark, what was your take on the...
Well, yes, actually, I was going to pick up on Just Like We Do as well, because I thought, you know, they've reached this kind of difficult 10th album stage where it's always that album, you know, they're intentionally repeating themselves, which they do. I think there's real kind of, there's a lot of kind of really surprising depth in this album, which I wasn't expecting, the singing. A few occasions, it sounds just like Paul Weller, and really, particularly late Paul Weller, where he's getting into quite avant-garde, sort of, you know, being a bit more experimental.
Can I make a vote for the track that you said like sounded like Vice Versa? I think really reminded me of Leiden in kind of Death Disco.
And also a bit of polystyrene in there as well. Yeah. You know, so,
but it's singing, which is different. It's moving on, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I just thought it was quite funny that, you know, that's going to really annoy Paul Weller fans because he's, you know, people always talk about like, you know, the great white soul voice, and then in that song says, I'm just a bit knocking out half cut ideas. So,
I don't know. I reckon there is a massive Venn diagram crossover between Weller fans
absolutely,
are grumpy old white blokes.
Well, Jason Williamson is a Weller fan. He is a disgruntled Weller and Noel fan.
Yeah.
And that's where the pain comes from. And I think the good thing about that voice is it fits, it suits those lyrics. It has that kind of pain in it that kind of feels kind of necessary for a Sleaford Mods lyric.
There must have been a 5 minute window when people didn't really know what they sounded like, that loads of like old Lambrettas fans were buying this record, getting it home, and being horrified by what they purchased.
I was talking about America. There's a hilarious thing I saw on Twitter or Instagram or something, and there was an American sort of indie record shop, and they have those kind of reviews where they basically stick the whole front of the album with it, what they think about, sort of, you know, staff reviews, and it's brilliant. It's like, I have no idea what these guys are talking about. I'm sure a lot of it is very rude, but it's amazing. it's like the idea of listening is not even having a clue. Like, there's no social references, they don't even know what half the words are and stuff, but they still like really kind of liked it musically.
Can I make a point about the music? Because I think that there's a real kind of sense of advancement in the actual music, which is the cliche about it is Mr. Spacebar. But, you know, things like, I think it's a track, Time Sands.
Yeah.
Is actually much kind of slower and, dare one say, funky.
Yeah.
And the fact that Mr. Spacebar Pusher does actually release ambient stuff under his own kind of solo label, I think there's a bit of cross pollination going on there, which is
it's not just a load of like Brexit moaning, and I think particularly the track that we played, the last track, I Feel So Wrong, is that's the window into the actual soul of the totally confused the dislocated middle aged bloke. I mean, there's a fantastic line about the future is a flag pissed on and a king sized bag of quavers. Well, this is not, you know, I sort of feel like there's a potential for them to fall into the kind of the Alf Garnett trap of what they're satirizing and what they're talking about. Yeah. People are out there going, that's you. Yeah. You're telling it like it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? Is there an element, though? I mean, because they're very much rock critic rock, aren't they? People like always love them.
Yeah.
And they're not really kind of making inroads into the Adele market or anything like that. Well, I mean, is there an element of class tourism there a little bit? You know, the people like us who live sort of in the metropolitan media elites can go, oh, yeah, that's life how it's lived. Well said, Sleaford Mods.
But I don't know. That's the thing I was saying. I don't know if it is, you know, kind of there is a particular authorial surrealism to it, which kind of it's Jason Williamson's fractured worldview. So it's kind of it's not a realist picture. It's not a documentary. It is like kind of there's an authorial madness to it, which I think is one of the great things. You know, that kind of it's it's his damaged brain that's looking at this world. Yeah. But I think, you know, and I think sometimes that works against it, but I think for the most part, unless it works in its favour, you know.
So the Super Bowls have actually pulled it off. Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Let's talk about what the young people are listening to then. We're going to have a look at Stormzy's new album, Gang Signs and Prayer. To get you in the mood, here is Big For Your Boots.
You're getting way too big for your boots. You're never too big for the boot. I got the big size toes on my feet. Your face ain't big for my boots.
Strength.
Kick up the U. Man, know that I kick up the U. Them boy there try to suck the truth. How dare you to suck the truth? Look, you're getting way too big for your boots.
Stormzy there with Big For Your Boots from Gang Signs and Prayer. Mark Hooper, you're saying this is the sound of Nottingham against him, Owen. He's not actually from Nottingham.
He's got his brilliant bell.
Boots.
Boots, yeah. I think the first thing to say, like Sleaford, suddenly he's like, he's a singer. He actually makes a point, because a few moments in the album, there's a little skit and there's a bit, he sings, I thought that Stormzy couldn't sing, sort of taking the mickey out of himself. But it's really interesting. He's obviously like the number one grime star. But what I found really interesting, I really like the slightly more aggressive urban sort of sound of about half of this album, but the other half is really quite smooth, you know, something rhymed with New Jack Swing and a bit of kind of Prince in the sort of 90s.
There's a slow jam or two.
Yeah, and there's a little skit where they basically have an FM radio DJ come on and go, oh, that was a smooth sound of Storm. I really love the fact that he's trying to expand and break out, and he said on quite a few times, you know, he wants to be treated in the same way that people talk about Adele. And he name checks her on the album, and it's quite interesting that he's putting his money where his mouth is. And I don't particularly like all of the slower, smoother stuff on the album, but it's really impressive that he's doing that and singing. And there's a sort of gospel track which is split sort of part one and part two. And the first part is great; it's like a sort of Hammond organ and really fits in really well with the album. And the second one, it's like a full on album, a full on gospel track, and it doesn't quite sit very well.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this sort of schizophrenic thing where he's talking about his past and his, you know, life of crime and bad boys and stuff, and then he shows a sensitive side, and it's, you know, it's really great to show, you know, this is a fully fleshed person. It's not just a sort of character.
What I found impressive about it was that it is massively musically varied. There's loads of rave on it. There's loads of stuff, everything from proper electronic weirdness to out and out, just, you know, for the crowds, you know, full on aggressive rhyming kind of thing. But it's really ambitious. And it doesn't sound like somebody templating from some, you know, you wouldn't say this has been drawn directly from, you know, Jay-Z or, you know, Beyonce or, you know, back to any time in the past of hip hop you want to listen to. It sounds entirely British and entirely like him, which I thought was really refreshing.
You know, grime is mainstream now. I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, you shouldn't be surprised that it sounds like a big album because, you know, grime's big. It's not some little niche scene anymore.
Yeah. Andrew, what did you make of it?
I totally agree with you. I also like the fact that you get a real sense of person and place in it. You know, it's for method reasons, actually listened to it at a cafe in Croydon, you know.
So. Yeah.
But it was, you know, you still get a very, you know, the thing we were saying about Jason Williamson, like, who is this person who is spewing out all this stuff? Whereas I think with Stormzy, you get a very strong sense of this person in terms of his strengths, his weaknesses, his humour. It's funny, you know, but, you know, it's also kind of about the minutiae of his life as well still. Mm. And the one thing I would say with it, it's kind of, for extra research, I went back and listened to the Skepta album and the Kano album, and kind of it's a very different sound. It's much more sort of bright and high end. It kind of lacks that kind of, you know, deeper sort of bass sound, and kind of that felt a bit odd to me at times. And also, I sort of agree with Mark. I think maybe there's one too many sort of slow jams on there. My only worry would be kind of losing a bit of that edge and a bit of that weight, and having a bit too many kind of, you know, philosophical slow jams on it, that I wouldn't want it to be the grime equivalent of Goldie's Timeless, you know. I wouldn't want it, you know, suddenly for it to get, you know, us to get sort of intelligent grime, you know, sort of a kind of, you know, and that would be my only concern about it. But that sense in which I get, you know, you get this picture of a very sort of, you know, human and sometimes quite, you know, sort of damaged, you know, you can tell that he's been through some rough stuff. And that full portrait of a person on it, I thought I was really impressed with it.
Matt, how does he shape up as a rapper? Because you know your rap stuff inside out.
I do, but I've always had a slight issue or problem with I'm sure there are grime kind of Jesuits who can distinguish between. Tell me where grime finishes, emceeing finishes, and hip hop rapping starts. And he seems to be very much kind of on that junction. Because some of his stuff sounds a lot. He gives a shout out to a guy called Giggs, who has been everyone thought was going to break through a couple of years ago. Who's got a much more kind of slower and monotonous kind of rap style, and would definitely say that he's a rapper from London. But he's got, you know, he's got flow, as I believe people say. but there are, I kind of do like that juxtaposition between he's almost like showing he can do it. A more kind of standard hip-hop beat and structure 16 bars and then go to a chorus and do that kind of hip-hop thing. And then he can also do that almost stream of consciousness grime thing of just picking on a supposed kind of competitor or whatever and just going on and on and on and on and on at them until he kind of runs out of things to say, which is entertaining, but isn't necessarily kind of top 40 fodder. I think it's, you know, my daughter is really into this album, 12 years old white girl living in the kind of Midlands, and so I think that's quite interesting how they've managed to cross put this himself and his work and this whole kind of package, don't forget, without a label, into that kind of space. I think that's kind of, you know, almost what he does as a musician, which is really good, is kind of less important than what he represents for the kind of industry.
Well, I mean, black British artists would often get burdened with the idea of having to be representatives of modern Britain today, like poor old Miss Dynamite got absorbed by New Labour. And this is kind of, and it kind of, you know, it sort of sets their career off in a terrible direction. I think it's quite good that there's no Gordon Browns around anymore to pretend that they're really into the Stormzy album.
Yeah, I bet you Jeremy Hunt is going to...
Yeah, really into Stormzy.
Well, I think the good thing is there's no one person for it to sit on the shoulders of, because, you know, we were talking about, you know, the Skepta album, the Kano album, so it's like, you know, you haven't got everyone sort of flocking to this kind of one representative. You've actually, what you've actually got is a great, you know, kind of not wanting to sound like a Labour politician, but you've got a great show of British talent, you know, and kind of there's no one who's having to take all that kind of cultural weight. You're actually just kind of going, oh, I prefer him, or I prefer this, I prefer that, which is exactly what should be going on, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on with some other music. Every week we ask our guests to come in with a tune each, something that they love right now. It can be old, it can be new, it's anything, as long as it is their editor's recommendation. Andrew Mayle, what have you brought to share the class?
I've brought a track by, it's not new, well, it kind of is. It's a track by a guy called Gene Clark, who used to be in the Byrds, and died far too young from living far too high. And it's basically this guy called, an archivist called John Delgatto, who's probably the world's number one Byrds fan. He's kind of knew that sort of Gene's sort of drunken peripatetic life meant that studios had all these kind of lost tapes, you know, kind of that even he'd forgotten about. He'd record full albums and then just kind of walk away from them and things like that. So he's spent about the last 10 years tracking down all these lost tapes, and they've just come out on a CD called The Lost Studio Sessions 1964 to 1982. And this one, the track I've chosen, which is Rolling My Sweet Baby's Arms, particularly painful because his supposed pal Terry Melcher took a bunch of Gene's tracks for his own 1974 solo album and taped over them, and taped over his own voice, over Gene's voice, and then put them onto his album. So John Delgatto has actually found the original Gene Clark vocals, the vocal versions, and there's, I think there's two tracks on this CD. All of the CD is great, but this one's is particularly sort of lovely because it has that kind of deep Gene Clark melancholy to it. And you've got extra melancholy because the realization that this track was just, you know, taped over by a friend. I'm having that.
Yeah, taped over by a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here we go. This is the original version of, I suppose it's like that when that woman painted over Jesus' face.
It's exactly like that.
So this is Rolling My Sweet Baby's Arms by Gene Clark.
Walking the streets with another man.
Okay, that's our show. Thank you to our guests. Remember, you can hear this show again and all of our past shows at audioboom.com/channel/bigmouth. Or why not subscribe at iTunes? Just go to the podcast section of the iTunes Music Store, search for Big Mouth, subscribe, and you will get the podcast version a day early. How about that then, eh? Matt and I will be back on SohoRadioLondon.com at 9 a.m. next Sunday. Stand firm, Britain. We will see you next week.